asked me to do this. I was hesitant, scared, and but I hear so many other people talk about their experience, strength, and hope, and one of the things that I really believe in is the third step. So, anyway. I want to give a little brief background as to how I became to believe. My mother got pregnant when she was a senior in high school, and because her family chose or said that you should be married and to be able to have a child, speaking of thirds, she chose to have a child and had to leave town. So in the beginning, I always felt like I wasn't wanted, and that was something to work out. Growing up, there have been instances in my life that I thought, how could there be a God if these things can happen to me? And, don't want to go into major things, just want to talk about a couple. A lot of sexual abuse. And by the time I got to teenage years, I turned to alcohol because that helped me to live. I could become the person outside of myself. And I chose alcohol because I loved the feeling that it gave me, and I could be a different person. And through adult years, that different person became morphed into, instead of Friday and Saturday nights, it was every night. And then it was leaving work to go to lunch, margarita lunch. And then it would be in the morning, I need that vodka lunch just to get started and to keep going through. So, adult years started, I thought they were gonna be okay. I thought if I got married and I had a family, life was gonna be good. 2 months after I got married, my husband was diagnosed with terminal cancer. I hated God. How could you do this? What is the purpose? But we got through that first year, and we thought he was clear, so we chose to start a family. And 8 months pregnant, the cancer came back. So I thought, okay, I meant to live my life alone, always. So we had our son, and because I didn't want him to be alone, because I knew how lonely that was, I wanted to have a second son, or a second child, turned to be another son, so I had 2 boys. Over the next, not 8 to 9 years, it was in and out of the hospitals with craniotomies, chemo, 2 craniotomies, 2 rounds of chemo, a round of radiation, and at the end of 7, 8 years, he thought he was clear. So he chose to live a life, and I chose to raise a family. And the only way I knew how to get through this was to turn to substances and alcohol, and I kept drowning my life. And when the boys got older, and we started seeing, or I started seeing some effects with their father, I didn't know how I was going to deal with them in the concept of death. So I started taking them to church because I thought maybe they can find something that I never did. And after about a year of going, I would sit in the back, either hungover or drunk, while they could go to their Sunday school class, and I still thought I was doing the right thing. After about a year, I went to a conference, and it was a bunch of meetings. And one of them, I went specifically to go for kids because I wanted to be a better mom. And I saw, and as I was walking to this room, there was another room that said the 12 steps to finding God, what's blocking you.
And I don't know why, but I went in.
I was drunk. And I sat there and I listened to two women talk about 12 steps and what was blocking them from God. And I left there knowing alcohol was destroying me and who I was. So the next day I went to an AA meeting and I had no idea what AA was about. But there was a group of people that acted and talked like I was. And so going through the first couple of months, it was just good to be sober. Get that high of like, oh my gosh, I don't have to drink to get through the day. But I knew that I wasn't going to be able to make this, so I got a sponsor. And right at 3 months, Chip, we were talking about this higher power. I went in with step one. I knew I was powerless. That part wasn't a big deal. But when we got to finding God, I wanted to search, and I didn't know how, because my God, I didn't even really think there was one, because if there was one, he wouldn't create the life that I saw. And so she said, start praying. And for me, I didn't know how to pray until I heard a story about, it's a conversation with God. And I thought about that, and I was thinking, whenever I meet someone new, I don't know how to talk to them. I have no idea what to say. And that's basically how I started praying. I had no idea what to say, but I kept doing it. And I kept praying, and at first it was just help me. And then it was saying the actual prayers that you see. And then slowly but surely there was like this hope. Maybe there is a loving God. And I started seeing that the effects that it had to other people. And so I had this demand. And I said, if there's a God out there, please help me. Show me that you exist. And right at 3 months, I went, my mom was having surgery at the Johns Hopkins and I needed to bring down some furniture. And so my female cousin and I went up, rented a U-Haul, got furniture, and we were driving back. And on the way, we were very conscientious about the gas, about time, about everything. And driving from Maryland to Florida, for some reason around Gainesville, we just started talking and ignoring that. And I saw a sign, and it said next exit, because we were thinking about stopping and getting food. And it said the next exit is 7 miles. Right after we passed that sign, the light went on and we were out of gas. And I knew we wouldn't have long. So I prayed. Sounds stupid, so. But I prayed and I said, you know, we've got two women in this car and you can get home to 5 kids. Who need us? Please guide us. Within half a mile, there was an exit. Didn't have a sign, but there was a gas station right on the exit. And that was like the first sign for me. Wow, this really works. So we got gas and got home. But I was still stubborn. Kept praying, kept doing everything. But I was slowly finding hope. And I was becoming willing to recognize that there was something greater than myself. And the true story about how I ended up really finding God after that was I had gotten hamsters for my sons because they wanted pets. And they were gone for the weekend. And the cages were completely locked up, but one of them was missing. And I went to bed that night, and I just said, dear Lord, I need proof. I need proof that you exist, because That gas thing, I wasn't really sure. If that was you, that was coincidence, you know. So I said, if there is a God, please put that hamster back in the cage when I wake up in the morning. It'll be there. Well, my son came home, and I had to tell him. And I'm so used to living a life of lies, living dishonestly, just trying to get by. And that was the first time I wanted to be honest with him when he found that his pet had gone missing. And a lot of people had said, 2 days had passed, and a lot of people had said, well, go buy another one that looks like it. Go do this, et cetera. And I just thought, I need to be honest. For the first time, I truly want to be honest. And it's something simple. But it was painful at the time. And so when I told him, he said, it won't happen, but, you know, Chewie's gone missing, and I have no idea where he is. And so that night I prayed again. Seriously, if you exist, you need to put that hamster back in the cage. And I will believe. I will believe. And that was my prayer. And their room is down the hall, and we put food in there thinking that at the hamster's going to look for food, he's going to find it. In the middle of the night, next to my bed, I heard scratching. And I woke up and I kept hearing the scratching. And there was the hamster. And I had to go underneath the dresser to get him. And the funny thing is, that's when it clicked for me that there is a God. I asked for him to put this hamster in a cage so that he'd give me proof. He said, no, I'm going to make you do a little work, and I'm not going to give it exactly as you asked for it. But I knew that it was him. And ever since then, I don't think there's an angry God anymore. I think there's a loving God. The more I go through AA and the more that I stay sober, it's been a year and 10 days. And every single day, that miracle keeps growing. And I see through other people, and I see through the little events in my life. But what the first 3 months really taught me was that I have to be open. And I have to take all those preconceptions of this angry, whatever I had before, let it go. And realize that there is something greater than me. And he's guided me. And whenever I've asked for one direction, he's going to give me another. But the more that I'm willing, I stop fighting that. And the more that I'm open, I keep listening to that. And so it's still a struggle. But every day, that's the first thing I do. I think about it. I don't even talk to him in the car. And it's not about the little things. I'm like, okay, I don't need that proof anymore. Now I need the guidance. And so I know that for me, I truly came to believe over little circumstances like that. But every day, the true miracle keeps happening. And I started faltering again a week ago. And I knew I had to come to sober staff. Because I thought if I was going to go to a meeting, 1 hour wouldn't cover it, but 48 hours really would. And going and listening to people, there have been things that I've heard that have just reinforced the fact that I need to be open and I need to be honest, and I just need to stay humble because he does exist. And that's how I came to believe.
Recovering alcoholic, my name is Harry.
Harry.
I don't like this. So anyways, You know, I was asked last night to do this, and how do I explain and describe how I came to believe, you know? I woke up this morning and with these bagpipes going off, right? And it dawned on me that today would be my grandmother's birthday. And I think she'd be 192 or something, since it's been around. I'd have to say it's all because of her. She lived a life. You know, when I go to a meeting, generally where I, the home group I belong to, which is in Brandon, I've got my designated seat that I like to sit in, and the steps are behind me on the wall. And often I'll share about my grandmother, how she lived that way of life, a very spiritual way of life. And she was the one that helped guide my mom into church and got me baptized and all that stuff. So I always believed in a God. You know, when I say a God, but I never really had a relationship or anything like that. And you know, part of my story, I always share that I lived a life that demanded I drank, it demanded I drug, it demanded I was going to die that way. You know. And just real quick, I go the other way now. I try to live a life that demands I stay sober. And I mean sobriety, not just not drinking, not just not drugging, you know. And that demands having a relationship with my higher power, which I'm going to say is God, period. I have no idea what I'm going to say, but, you know. You know, I look back when I first came into these rooms. I was one of those, I picked up a white chip, 30 days, pick up a white chip, 15 days, pick up a white chip. Then there was the other group I went to. I had 30, 60, 90 days, 6 months. And then there was another place. I had some other sobriety days. So there was four or five of me walking around at any given moment. You know, and because I lived a life with nothing but lies. You know, I heard the guy last night share, and he said that this program is about this, about how to learn how to be truthful, you know. And I'm honest, I honestly believe that this whole program is about, you know, the first step. I love how it works, which I haven't heard read this weekend, but it talks about, you know, learning and being a person of honesty. And then there's this phrase in there, it talks about that there are those who suffer from grave emotional mental disorders. And I always want to raise my hand right there. But I don't listen to the next part. Many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. I don't want to hear that part, but I do. I have that. I have the capacity to be honest. And I need to start doing it. Now, how do I do that? And that's what this spirituality, I'm not going to say part of the program, because the whole program is spiritual. But the whole program, it says on page 45, is about the whole purpose of the book, which is the program, is to find a higher power that will solve my problem. It doesn't say alcohol, it doesn't say drugs, it says my problem, which is this. Again, how do I learn to be honest? That's my problem. I'm afraid to tell you guys, me. I'm afraid to share me, with you guys, you know. And I often used to share, my wife said she heard somebody say it the other night, was, this is my island of misfits. You know, from the red-nosed reindeer, because they had to train with square wheels. You had, you know, I'm one of them. I was broken, but I found a place I finally fit in, and I don't have to be something I'm not. The third step, you know, I often heard it said, came to believe. And I really like how the guy last night said that. I came to believe that. You know, I haven't heard anybody say that word that with enthusiasm. You know, that a power greater than myself. And I like that. You know. So that's what this whole program's about. Like I was saying, page 45. what am I doing with that higher power? You know, because my first 2.5 years, like I was saying about the white chips, I kept saying I was relapsing, I never relapsed. I resumed. You know, I got to give myself that much credit. I guess some people identify, you know? And I believe that, like I said last night, that, you know, if I'm sincerely doing this deal, it's impossible for me to go back out. Because if I don't call my sponsor when I feel like drinking, well, I'm not doing the deal. You know? If I'm not sharing my problems, you know, I have to tell on myself. You know, and my sobriety date is the 14th of December, 1992. I was 29 and a half years old. When I had 6 months sober, there was two things I didn't think was going to happen. First of all, I turned 30. The way I lived wasn't going to happen. And 6 months without a drink or a drug. Whoa. You know, and I'm not going to be one of those. This is what I wanted to address, is the things that I hear people parrot in meetings. And some of it sounds so good. You know, like, my best thinking got me here. No, it didn't. I quit listening to my best thinking. My worst thinking is what got me. It's my best thinking that keeps me here. You know, and the other one, and it really has to do, is how can I believe in a power greater than myself that I can't see, touch, or feel? Dude, look around. I see it. I feel it. It's here. You know, I'm not living a life that demands a drink no more. How can I not believe in a power greater than myself? And then I'm going to close with this. You know, what God has given me is clarity to see through the dishonesty. And I'm not going to say I don't lie, because trust me, I still tell lies. And they still come back and bite me. But what it is today, I no longer, is that justifying, making excuses. I was so good at, look what you made me do. I love that phrase. You know, I could never own what I was doing. Never. I always wanted to blame it and make the excuse. You know, or the other one is, I'll do it tomorrow. And I'm a firm believer that this program, it isn't for the people that need it. Even though it is. It's not for the people that want it, even though it is. It's for the people that do it. If I ain't doing it, I can't get it. So, the higher power, God, you know, as soon as I started going that path, you know, the whole program is about doing step three. You know, I learned to be honest, and that's how I do step three. Steps four and five, I look at me, what did I do wrong? What needs, oh my God. You know, and it ain't all that bad once I've really looked at it. Six and seven is I'm asking God to help me fix those things, you know. That what are my character defects that need fixed? And the first one and most one was lying. Hello. And there's so many areas of lying. I believe all my fear comes from being dishonest. You know. 8 and 9 are repair all that stuff. I don't go just saying I'm sorry. You know, we all know that. That's what I call a man. And then, of course, 10, 11, 12, I continue to do this way of life and share it with another alcoholic. You know, and I'm a firm believer in service work. You know, I don't have to just work with another alcoholic. I can work with anybody. You know, I'm a firm believer. You know, I have a house now. I was homeless for 6 years, now I have a house. But I'm a firm believer. If I can't be a good neighbor, I shouldn't be one. You know, and I try to be that today. No matter where I go. I was talking with somebody earlier about geographicals, you know, making that change on somewhere else and starting over. I still think it can be helpful as long as I change when I go. But then again, wherever I go, there I am. So, I don't know. I'm probably rambling, didn't know what to share, but came to believe in a power greater than myself. I want to thank my grandmother, because I really believe if it wasn't for. You know, she never drank a drop of alcohol in her life, never had a driver's license. But I can still remember, being about 8 years old, she got conned at the bank, and they emptied her bank accounts, 12 grand or something like that. And what'd she do? She prayed for them. You know? And that's what this program teaches me. Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Linda. I am an alcoholic. What a pleasure being here. Last night, Curtis came to my tent, and I'm supposed to be school right now. No, no. I was doing my homework because I am in college, and I'm supposed to be in school this morning at 9 o'clock in the morning. And when he asked me, I was hesitant because, you know, I had a good excuse not to be in service today. And then I said, he said, well, you speak too smart about that. And I immediately said, yes, of course I do it. And I'm glad that I'm not a steward. I'm here for all of you because this is a blessing to be of service. And of course, I'm going to cry. You don't know me. How did I came to be? I grew up in a household that always was religious, and we had a lot of religious beliefs. Going to church and, you know, studying the Bible with the family. So I knew about God. You know, I knew that I just didn't, you know, explosion happen. If the explosion didn't happen, God made it happen. You know, I was very clear. I was very clear in the values and the morals and the way that God wanted us to live, wanted, needed it. I was very clear. But, you know, I'm an alcoholic, you know, and I believe that I was born with this disease, and it was in me from a very young age. And I was rebellious against that because those were rules. That was discipline. And I didn't want to follow rules, and I'm an undisciplined person by nature. So when I came into this program and I surrendered to this way of life, before that, I came into the rooms and I made Joe's Club my higher power along with my sponsor. But what happened was that I left the meeting that my sponsor was sitting next to me. And before I hit that road out of the parking lot, I told my seat, shut up, I'm going to feed you. And I went back out and I went back out. And that night, I was crying, snot falling down my face. And I started praying to the higher power that I kept hearing in Joe's Club, to the higher power that my sponsor kept talking to me about. My father always told me that if I did wrong, if I sinned, God was going to punish me. And I did a lot of wrong, I did a lot of sins. So I figured, you know, he's going to punish me anyway, so I'm going to go out with a bang. You know, I'm going to have fun, and I'm going to live my life the way I want to live it, how I want to live it, wherever I want to live it, you know? So when I found myself in that state of desperation, and I was almost losing my mind, my sanity, I prayed to that higher power, and I asked him to help me, because I was scared to drink, and I was scared not to. And I called my sponsor, I called the people around me, and I picked up a white chip. And ever since, I've been hungry for this way of life. Ever since, I was terrified of disease. Today, I respect the disease. Because the problem about alcoholics is that they give me the tools to keep the disease at bay. You know, the problem about alcoholics is that they give me the tools to have conscious contact with my higher power. And that fear led me to do everything that you all told me to do. No questions asked. You know, today I live a life that demands that I stay sober. Not only that, it demands that I speak to God every single day, throughout the day. Last night the speaker was talking about that he finally seen the trees in the sky and all that. And the beauty of nature that God gave to us. And I used to have a bird, a bush in front of my window that had a bird. And in the midst of my disease, that bird would was saying that I wanted to shoot it. I couldn't stand that hurt. You know, and all of a sudden I get sober and I start developing that contact with my higher power. And I love every morning when I hear my bird sing, because that bird is singing directly to me. Because I'm still born. But you know, today I know that I will sin, and today I know that I'm not perfect. But you see, the one thing that my father forgot to tell me was that God is a forgiving God. You know, that He's my Father, He's my loving Father, and He will do anything to continue to protect me. He forgot to tell me. I think He used it like the monster on the bed, so I would be good and they work. It just didn't work. So, you know, I always remember that, you know, those characteristics that my higher power have, those are the ones that I strive to be in every given day. Do I fall short? Yeah, I do. I do. But I continue to do it every single day. I continue to try to be a better person. You know, if I go through a day without harming another human being and didn't pick up, I'm in a good spot. I'm in a good spot. You know, I wake up in the morning when I'm conscious and know that I'm awake, I immediately start thanking my higher power for giving me another day to try to please His will and to be a good human being. You know, I remember I read this book, and it's not AA affiliated, but it's called The Shack. And that was the process that I came to remember that God. You know, and when I got hungry for this program and surrendered myself to my sponsor, God, I remember, you know, the things that I had learned when I was a child. It came back. It was adapted, because when you learn something, you don't unlearn it. You just, you know, replace it somewhere, you know. And it came back, and it came back that my Father is a forgiving Father. My God is a loving God. My God is a patient, a tolerant God, you know, and those are the things that I strive to reach in my everyday affairs. You know, what a pleasure being here in service. This is my fourth year here, and I'm loving it. And I remember sitting in that fat lake, 7 months sober, and asking that God of mine, you know, to continue to give me peace, because, you know, I was very discombobulated. Early in my sobriety. And He was the one that calms my thoughts. And He's the one that brings me here. And I thank y'all. You have a wonderful day.
Serious problem for me. I had evidence. The state had evidence. Hospital was, it was just a gift. So I came here and I met wonderful people, just phenomenal people. Some of them have passed on, but they never die. They're like ghosts, they echo in my mind. And their faces too. So, you know, I heard stuff like that. They said, you know, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you'd be ready to take certain steps. And I thought, yeah, I want what you guys have. You guys are sober and happy, and you're sane. You know, you give me advice. I'm a mess in here, and I listen to you. And some of you, I even have the stupid, I mean, the courage to go out there and ask for advice. And they would tell me the same stuff. But they repeat, and you're willing to go to any life to get it. And I thought, well, wait a minute. I want what you have, but I'm not sure if I want to go to any life to get it. That requires a lot. So, you know, it's funny. You hang around AA, and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is phenomenal. And it's worked well in my life. It's even worked better in my family's life, in loved ones' lives, you know? My daughter's 35 years old. She was about 7 or 8 years old when I first brought her around AA. And, you know, she's got a phenomenal life. When she has difficulties in her life, she wants to be around you guys. She really does. So what a place. But, you know, I learned about these steps, and I worked these steps to the best of my ability for a number of years. And I even met some people and took some other guys to the steps, and I could do that. It was beautiful. And I watched you guys. I came to believe. I really did. Here's what I came to believe, though. I came to believe that this stuff worked wonderful for you. And I saw you light up with God in your life. And I saw people make peace with themselves. And I thought, I get it, man. I see it. I believe how this stuff works for you. It's beautiful. And I was very happy for you. But I was insane. I was insane. I've always been insane. I had to drink. I could never, ever, ever see the truth. Our first speaker this morning really, really touched me. You know, I had some bad shit happen to me when I was a little kid. Stuff that no little kid deserves to have happen. But in my mind, I was the only human being that ever had that kind of pain. And I've lived my entire life that whole way. I have one brother, two sisters. We had the same parents. They were married for 50-something years before my dad died. They loved us dearly. But I knew deep down inside of me, I was a black sheep. They loved them real good, and they told me they loved me. They even showed me that they loved me. But I was insane. In my mind, I thought, yeah, but you know what? You're holding back on a big secret there. You really hate my ass. I've had a skewed vision. When I was 4 years old, Mom gave me a belt. I was getting dressed to go someplace. Who knows? But I remember putting this belt on. It was my brother's belt. So it was a hand-me-down, and it was too big. And I could not, and Mary will tell you, I'm still a little bit of a diva when it comes to clothing. But I tried to put this belt on, and it wouldn't fit, and it wouldn't work right. And man, I blew a fuse. It was horrible. It was horrific. I got hand-me-down clothes. I don't even get new shit. It doesn't fit right, and it won't work right. Mary's gonna love this. I was irritable, restless, and discontented at the age of 4. I needed a drink. I needed a jar of Xanax. I mean, I needed something. Life was not okay. I've got an entire life based on not enough. There's not enough. I mean, sure, you love me, but it's not enough. There's an emptiness in here. I mean, I think funny. My buddy Jim was here yesterday. You know, I was running to him at Publix, different places, and we'll talk about things we catch up. And he says, Jimmy, we think funny. As alcoholics, we think funny. That is our problem. That is in our minds. I learned about God at the Catholic school. It was really pretty neat at school. We had penguins right there. And they talked about God. And I'm told that they talk about a loving, forgiving God. It's not what I heard. My filter was all screwed up. It was a loving God, and he loved people, except for Joe. That little prick. So, you know, we get 500 people in the room, and they say, man, we really like you. And then there's that one person that says, and that's what we're going to focus on, that one over there. So, I mean, I got a whole life in this. I think when I came to AA, I spent a long time in AA, and I really didn't know the right questions to ask. I didn't know the right questions to ask myself. I really guess I didn't need to know at the time why I needed to stay sober. Because I came to meetings and I heard about these promises. Cool. That's what I like, free prizes. So I come to AA and cover it on promises. And I thought, that's what I need, is more stuff to make me happy and make me feel good. And I would get some glimpses, you know, a little job, a little money, a little car, drive people to meetings. I used to go to a place that had a lot of meetings, and I chaired this particular meeting like every Tuesday night or something, and this old couple walked up, that's probably about 4 years sober, and I had two guys asking me to sponsor them, so I was getting to be hot shit. And there was an old couple at this meeting, and they came up to me and they said, oh, thank you, that was a really good meeting. And they said, we always like coming to Joe's meeting. And something inside me thought, that's not right. Oh, but I really like that. It sounded good. And there's a whole bunch of lessons that I wasn't ready for, really. So I had to do a little more living. And I'm going to say fortunately, I drank again. Fortunately, I went into deeper pits of hell. And it was my own hell. It was very, very difficult to come back into AA. And I didn't come back once. Over and over and over, I staggered, was drugged. I'd sit down in a meeting, I'd be drunk. I'd sit down next to people and they'd get up and leave. I thought for sure, man, you guys will love me no matter what, right? They'll tell me to keep coming back, right? I burnt people in AA out. I did. I went through again. It has been a very, very difficult road back, but it was my road, and it's what had to happen. So this come to believe the power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. I didn't know what sanity looked like. All I've got is crazy my whole life. How did I know what sanity looked like? I knew it looked like in you, but I didn't know what it looked like in me. They told me, and they talked about it, I had to find a power greater than myself that would solve my problem, not your problem, my problem. My problem in my mind. So I got beat down really, really bad. The physical part, who cares? We all been there. And a lot of people more physically so than me. I hit a state in my mind where hanging myself over my little balcony, there was some roses down at the time, was really, really good. I mean, I was giddy at the fact that I could hang myself that day and it would have been perfectly okay. It was like a delight. It would have been such a wonderful relief from what was going on in here. And like a dumbass, I called one person from AA and said, Andy Mulligan, I'm out of DUI school and they kicked me out because I'm drunk. It's the third time I've been there. They take attendance and breathalyze it, which I know that, but I had to drink in order to get there. Can you come pick me up? He picked me up, dropped me off to the VA, and I said, please don't come pick me back up out of here, okay? And he said, I wasn't planning on it. I tried out for a couple days, and I begged to be back in AA around new people. And I called my sponsor, I've had him a long time, it's been about 20 years now. And I said, okay, David, what do I do? And instead of me coming in here and saying, you know, I think what I did wrong, or maybe I need to work on this step, I said, what do I do? And his response to me, which was my story, he said, I'll let you know. So for about a year, I waited. And it was no more my thoughts, my plan of what I needed to do to make me sane. Because remember, I'm insane, so the ideas I come up with are crap. So I wait, and I'm waiting patiently, and I'm listening. And I wasn't allowed to talk in meetings. I've done plenty of that. I got all the answers. Nope, no more. Because of crap. So I sat, and I listened, and I looked. And I looked, and I looked, and I looked, and I cried. You talk about sliding the boot. I cried. I cried over everything. And a funny thing started to happen His life started to become less about me and more about you, more about others. And stuff was revealed to me. And it's always been offered. You know, they say these are steps we take. I can take these like a gift, like a birthday present. I don't have to work these steps. Me working these steps is an insane person attempting their will. I can take these steps. I can receive these like a gift. So I start listening, and I start seeing, and I start seeing an entire world around me. But I'm going to talk about the trees. I had no idea that there was trees, that there was life outside of me. I had no idea that you people wanted to be loved, that you wanted to give love, that you had hearts, that you were small children in big, giant, grown-up bodies, some of them very old bodies, that we were the same. I started to understand what they mean by anonymity. It's a spiritual foundation. It doesn't have anything to do with who I see here, what I hear here. It's a spiritual foundation, anonymity, nameless, faceless. We are the same. We are people. I have the same pains, the same wants, the same desires. I look into Mary's eyes at night sometimes, and I see this wonderful human being. Never mind she's hot, but I mean, I see this wonderful human being. To be able to give love, receive love, gifts of alcoholics and others, sanity, some kind of sanity. I came to me. I came to myself, my true self. I had to embrace the fact that I was a sexually abused little kid, that I was a goofy little bastard, that I was insecure, a liar, thief, and a cheat. Oh yeah, absolutely. And I can lie today. I lie because I failed to see the truth. Everything is exactly what it's supposed to be. I had to take every drink, smoke all the crack, and eat all the Xanax I had to eat. I had to do every day. I had to cry, I had to love, I had to hurt. And I'll shut up now, but you know, think, okay, so Joe, Wednesday I'll have 11 years. So a couple weeks ago, my 35-year-old daughter, who was brought up in AA pretty much, Mary and I were watching a favorite TV show Sunday night. We're like, we're in heaven. Food, we're ready to go to bed. And my phone's blowing up. It's my daughter. I have a 14-year-old grandson with something called Asperger's. It's really, I don't know, could alcoholism, Asperger's, they were really close. He was choking. He couldn't breathe. His airway was blocked. He was eating dinner and, you know, something was. So what the hell? So we get in the car and we drive up to Wayne Lakes, put some hospital up there, and they couldn't treat him. And my daughter's losing. I mean, she's not losing him, but she's very, very frightened. That's her firstborn child. She has two more, by the way. My middle granddaughter, who is the boss of my world, is the one woman that can tell me to do anything. I'm like, okay. And then there's a 2-year-old grandson who's born with Down syndrome. And he's a handful, but man, what a blessing he is. With the 14-year-old's choking, and food won't go down. And my daughter says, they're going to have to take him by helicopter or by ambulance to some other hospital. This is bad. And I'm like, holy shit. So we drive up there, and I said, you know, do you want Papa Joe to ride that ambulance with you? And he just nods. Mm-hmm. Right? So we ride down in the ambulance. Years ago, I just told him massage therapist. I stay sober in AA. Do this stuff. I got a decent running car, driver's license, insurance, all this neat shit. Gifts of AA, gifts of sobriety. I ran to ambulance with him. There's nothing I can do. The paramedics can't do anything. If it goes the wrong way, it could kill him. So all I know to do is put my hand on his back and hold his hand and say, buddy, if you need anything, I'm here. We made it down to the hospital. They take him out of the ambulance, they bounce the stretcher down, we're going into the building itself, and he gives us look like he's gonna die right down there on the spot. Only he coughs out this large piece of meat that he failed to chew, and can breathe just fine. He's good as new. And I thought, wait a minute. So this whole stay and sober business maybe this has that much to do with me. Maybe I have to stay sober to play this little tiny part in this big, giant world back here. Because if Poppy Joe's not sober, I'm a menace to society. I ruin people's lives. Me staying sober is these little, quiet little things that happen to take place. And I get to be a part of this big thing called Sober Stop, which is just wonderful. So I have come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity, will restore me to sanity. I just have to be alert and be awake to see what the sanity looks like. Too much thinking, and I miss it all. So as my sponsor reminds me, you know, pause. It's a beautiful thing. Because I get to see and feel and hear what love is. So thank all you guys.